My pleasure to introduce to those gathered before this joint session the President Pro Tem of the California State Senate, James R. Mills of San Diego.
It is my pleasure to introduce the Lieutenant Governor of the State of California, the Honorable Ed Reinecke.
Mr. President Pro Tem, Mr. Speaker, gentlemen of the Senate, gentlemen of the Assembly, ladies and gentlemen as guests, it is my privilege and pleasure to introduce to you the Governor of the State of California, the Honorable Ronald Reagan.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Lieutenant Governor Reinecke, Mr. President Pro Tem, Mr. Speaker, members of the Senate and Assembly and guests, welcome to Death Valley Days. The last time we met under these same circumstances, the theme of my remarks was one of reform and austerity. Our state had reached a crisis in welfare and Medi-Cal demanding a massive change in direction. If we were to avoid bankrupting both the spirit of those who receive public assistance and the pocketbooks of those who pay for it. Austerity was urged in state expenditures because the transition from an inflated Vietnam War boom to a peacetime economy had adversely affected our revenues. While we're still undergoing that transition, there are indications the economy is on an upward curve. The President's national economic program is accomplishing its goals. Inflation is being slowed. Our own revenue structure is being stabilized thanks to the withholding measure enacted during the special session. But we shall be just as diligent in seeking economies as we have been in the past. With the average citizen spending a third of his work week just earning the money to pay his taxes, there is still an urgent need to reduce the size and the cost of government. So Scrooge rides again. Those working men and women who, if I can paraphrase, never have asked what government can do for them, but have constantly been told what they can do for government, are the social and economic backbone of our state. They deserve more consideration than they've had from all the governments they pay for so dearly with the fruit of their toil. The last legislative session was the longest in our state's history, and yet long-time problems remain unresolved. Problems in educational finance, property tax reform, and environmental protection. Our young people between 18 and 21 have achieved the vote since last we met. The legislation you passed and I signed confers at age 18 nearly all the adult rights and responsibilities. Absolutely essential to the promise, however, of full citizenship is a share in the opportunities our society offers, the availability for work. We must continue our efforts to stimulate job-creating industries. This means broadening and diversifying California's economic base to assure further employment opportunities for citizens displaced from their jobs in defense-oriented and other changing industries. This does not mean abandoning our great aerospace industry, which still provides thousands of job opportunities for Californians. When I prepared this message, I expressed the hope that the space shuttle program would be approved. Yesterday, we learned that it had, which will mean thousands of jobs and billions of dollars for our state's economy. Lieutenant Governor Ed Reinecke. Lieutenant Governor Ed Reinecke led our campaign in support of this project and to advance California as the logical site for the program. We hope that Congress and the national administration will agree on the logic of California being selected for this site. But even so, it is a great economic boost for our state. The Lieutenant Governor also played a major role in the successful effort to obtain financing for our largest defense contractor. And this preserved jobs and generated thousands of additional ones for California. We've moved to provide development for industry that will help the prosperity and the generation of peace that is now a major national goal. With your help, we've created a California Commission for Economic Development to expand trade and generate new job opportunities, by encouraging the location and expansion of business and industry in California. To help ease the plight of the unemployed, you passed and I signed legislation that increased the maximum unemployment insurance benefits from $65 a week to $75. This was the first such increase since 1965. Substantial improvements were made in the state workman's compensation system. Increases worth $142 million a year in new benefits for California workers, the largest package of social insurance benefits in our state's history. We're now asking the leaders of the private sector and labor to join with us in reevaluating the economic needs of California citizens to determine what we in state government can do, or perhaps what we can stop doing, that will further improve the economy of our state. And these results will be made available to you for appropriate action. One thing we must do is come to grips once and for all with the hodgepodge accumulation of federally mandated manpower programs. Right now, it is impossible to catalog them or to learn whether there is costly duplication, nor do we even know if they provide training for jobs that no longer exist. California's agricultural industry contributes more to this state's prosperity than any other industry. It does so in spite of a lack of effective laws on agricultural labor management relations. Bills to establish a system of union representative elections for agricultural workers have failed both in Congress and here in Sacramento. We can no longer defer action on this problem. It is absolutely imperative that we enact in this session legislation guaranteeing California's agricultural workers the right to choose by secret ballot whether they want to be represented by a union, and if so, by which union. The Welfare Reform Act of 1971, which we enacted, is unquestionably the most significant social legislation in California's history. Already we're achieving our goal of increased aid to the 2/3 of the welfare population who have no outside income, while at the same time we eliminate costly abuses through stricter eligibility standards. No longer are we adding 50,000 new cases a month to our welfare caseload. At the end of November, there were 151,000 fewer people on welfare and general relief than there were last March. If we had not passed these reforms, during these last 8 months, welfare would have cost the taxpayers another $100 million. Several of the laws we work most to achieve have been challenged in the courts for various reasons, and sometimes it seems for no good reason at all. If legislation is indicated as a result of these legal actions, I will request its passage. In the meantime, I shall ask that you improve the enforcement of child support laws involving absent parents, establish a system of fairly reapportioning welfare funds that we requested last year, impose tighter and more realistic standards on the amount of property a recipient may own and still be eligible for welfare, and increase incentives for able-bodied recipients to work. The passage of Medi-Cal reform was another major milestone. Not only does it provide significant improvements in financing the program, it also broadened the coverage to include an estimated 800,000 needy Californians formerly served by county health programs at tremendous cost to local property taxpayers. For the first time, a single standard of care is available to all needy citizens within a system of comprehensive services that includes reasonable controls to curb abuses. These reforms have reduced the cost to the taxpayers an estimated $208 million in state, local, and federal funds. Our long struggle to put Medi-Cal and welfare on a realistic financial basis has been focused primarily on the least affluent segment of society. Obviously, our citizens of great affluence can take care of themselves. But in between these two groups is that same great majority of our citizens I mentioned earlier, the working men and women who underwrite the whole system. In some ways, they are becoming the truly disadvantaged. It's true that more than 85% of all Americans under age 65 have through their job some type of private health insurance. It takes care of most of their health needs. But when they or members of their families are stricken with an extended catastrophic illness, being too young for Medicare and too affluent for Medi-Cal, they face financial disaster. Now, I am unalterably opposed to so-called nationalized health insurance, which in fact is socialized medicine. But I, at the same time, I believe it is possible to develop a system of health insurance to protect every Californian against the economic catastrophe that often accompanies extended illness. Some will suggest that we should wait for the federal solution to this problem. I don't share that belief, nor do I believe this state should act hastily and impose on the taxpayers a medical subsidy which would increase the inflation of medical costs and exchange an excessive medical bill or insurance premium for an excessive addition to the tax burden. We're going forward with research on this subject and will report our findings to you very shortly. Venereal disease has reached epidemic proportions among our young people. A citizens' task force we established last year has recommended an all-out counterattack. One recommendation is that all public schools conduct venereal disease prevention courses. I am in wholehearted agreement with this recommendation. However, there is at present a lack of adequate instructional material and a shortage of qualified teachers. In cooperation with State Superintendent of Public Instruction, Wilson Riles, we are moving to fill this void. We are undertaking a program of training workshops for teachers. The Public Health Department will have more than $200,000 during the next 6 months to assist this educational effort and to find more caseworkers. We're urging every school district to join the battle against venereal disease by instituting VD prevention courses, and they have the authority to do this under existing law. Now, during 1971, the new State Department of Consumer Affairs extended its activities and helped achieve legislation to protect the public against unwanted mailed merchandise, abusive credit card practices, and high-pressure door-to-door salesmen. The report of this department provides more detail on this increased scope of consumer education, on consumer protection, and in providing greater public voice on licensing boards. But I would like to give special mention to the department's role and industry's help in supporting the legislation to create a new Bureau of Auto Repair to deal with unscrupulous practices which victimize consumers. Another consumer innovation which has been widely discussed in recent years is no-fault insurance. Such a system could help relieve the present overcrowded dockets in our court system. In LA County, personal injury cases involving auto accidents account for nearly 80% of all civil jury trials. A modified system of such insurance, tailored specifically to meet California's needs, could accomplish other desirable ends. There's a potential for substantial savings in premiums and prospect of eliminating some red tape involved in settling claims. We must find together that system of auto insurance that will best meet the needs of our citizens. The most urgent unfinished tasks before us involve our educational system, its financing and direction, and the equally important necessity of providing comprehensive property tax relief for millions of overburdened California homeowners. The issues are closely related. It is impossible to discuss property tax reform without considering the impact on educational finance. We've tried for 3 years to adopt a comprehensive property tax reform program. Again, I ask you to work with the executive branch and with Wilson Riles to eliminate the chronic crisis in public school finance by shifting the burden from the homeowner to a broader base tax. The time is growing short. If we fail this year, the people may act themselves through the initiative process. The state Supreme Court opinion pointing out the inequities of the present system of financing local schools merely emphasized something we all know. We need sweeping changes in the present system of financing local schools K through 12 to reduce reliance on the property tax, to simplify the method of distributing the educational funds, to equalize educational opportunities by providing a basic amount of financial support for each student in every district. This done, we can get on to other equally important needs in education, preparing every youngster for his own academic or career goals, and including sufficient training to give each high school graduate at least an entry-level saleable skill in the world of work. Now, despite our problems, our educational system has responded remarkably well to much of what we've asked. And still, we want schools to do more and more. It's time now for greater reflection on realistic priorities. We must create an atmosphere in education that will welcome effective programs designed to achieve specific objectives. Too many of us, when we have a problem, approach it by saying, there ought to be a law. Well, maybe this should be reversed in education. It requires a book 3 inches thick to list all the directives and mandates contained in the educational code. Last year, nearly 1,000 more were proposed. It's just possible that we need fewer laws and greater flexibility and control at the local level. We must examine the potential of year-round operation and a voucher system, providing a grant for students to use at the school of their choice should be tested at least on a limited basis, and I will again support legislation to establish such a pilot program. In higher education, probably the most widely noted recent legislation was your action granting university status to those of our state colleges which deserve that designation. However, we don't intend any major changes in the existing functions of the various segments of higher education. I'm confident that various studies now underway on our master plan will find the defined difference in function between the university, the state college, and the community colleges must be maintained. Our system is based on a commitment that every youngster should have an opportunity to develop to the utmost of his desire and ability, regardless of his financial status. We therefore have increased support for the State Scholarship and Loan Commission from $5 million a year 5 years ago to $28 million in the forthcoming budget. Yet it's becoming increasingly clear that there is insufficient coordination between various student aid programs, a lack of guidelines, and possibly too much administrative overhead costing dollars that would be better spent in aiding students. I believe it would be desirable to have all state-financed student aid programs handled through the Scholarship and Loan Commission. The fact that we have tuition at the University of California, not at the state colleges, has created an undesirable imbalance in higher education. And I strongly urge you to give the trustees authority to determine the amount of tuition at state colleges and the purpose for which it will be used. Ultimately, I believe that we'll find the fairest method of assuring higher education to all who can profit from it will be the establishment of a deferred tuition plan allowing students to pay their share of the cost over a period of at least 20 years after graduation. In the meantime, however, there is one deserving group which I feel you'll agree is worthy of special attention. I urge you to take action to assure free tuition at the University of California and the state colleges for the sons and daughters of American servicemen who are prisoners of war or missing in action in Southeast Asia. You'll be pleased to know the withholding measure you enacted in the special session should end the state's chronic cash flow problem, even after we pay for breaking up the broken concrete. After we share with the people of California the so-called withholding windfall by giving every citizen a one-time 20% tax credit on the income tax due on April 15th. Several tax reforms we've long been seeking are part of the revenue package you adopted. A minimum state income tax, reduction of the oil depletion allowance, and $46 million in new property tax relief for senior citizens. This will range from 32% for those at $6,000 a year income level to more than 80% at $3,000 a year and below. Now, this will help our senior citizens keep the homes they work for most of their lives. We must do as much for other homeowners. And while we must recognize the need for new sources of revenue for local government, I still maintain there is no need for any general state tax increase for new spending. Economic necessity required us to forego general salary increases for our state employees. There was never any question in our minds but that our civil service employees deserved an increase. There's been a 5-year growth in California, and yet there's actually been a decrease in the number of state employees. This means that in many departments, the workload increase has been absorbed with no increase in staff. But we're happy this year that we can recognize the dedication of our employees by including in the budget $95.8 million for salary increases and for correcting salary inequities. This is equivalent. This is equivalent to a 5% salary increase for state employees and a 7.5% increase for academic employees in the University of California and the state colleges. The budget also will include approximately $65 million in new state support for schools over and above that allocated under existing formulas. And this year we're going to do something that's been long overdue with regard to the state budget. We're going to submit it in two parts, as it logically should have been submitted for many years past. When the intricacies of bookkeeping and accounting make the return of money to the taxpayers show up as an increase in the cost of state government, it's easy to understand why citizens have trouble keeping their eye on government. Roughly 2/3 of the state budget is money collected by the state, but returned to cities, counties, school districts, and local programs. Over the other 1/3 of the budget covers the actual cost of running state government. Lumping them together makes it difficult for the citizen to keep track of where the increased expenditures take place. For example, the $40 million tax relief, $46 million tax relief for senior citizens, will appear in the budget as a $46 million increase. So the first part of the budget we submit will be for those monies we return to local entities. We'll follow this with a second section covering the cost of actually operating state government, and in this way the taxpayers can better check on our stewardship. There's been great concern nationwide about the need for prison reform. Seems to be a lack of knowledge among Californians as to where our state stands in this regard. Well, in recent years, I think you should be pleased to know that our correctional system has become a model for the nation. Our rehabilitation and parole system is 76% successful in returning convicted offenders to useful lives in society. We have single cell occupancy of all inmates in all our prisons, something I don't believe any other major state has achieved. Our experiment in allowing family visits has proven successful and has now been expanded to the whole system. Now, this effort at rehabilitation doesn't mean we're being soft on crime. It realistically recognizes that 90% of all prisoners eventually are returned to society. We still have problems, some created by this success. As the number of inmates has declined, the percentage of so-called hardcore offenders has increased, and this has increased the potential for violence within our prisons. 2 years ago, I called for a complete study of our correctional system. The results of that study are now being reviewed. During this session, a program to continue improving the correctional system will be presented to you. Following the tragic incident at San Quentin last year, I directed the Board of Corrections to make a special study of violence in prisons. The board recommended, and we added, 405 new security and other positions, including psychiatric units. I ask you to continue this increased staffing level. The new state budget will include funds for planning new maximum security facilities. We will also take the first step toward closing San Quentin Prison. This prison once housed up to 5,000 inmates. It will be held in an average population of 1,500 during the next fiscal year, and we hope to close it completely by the end of 1974. A new area of crime fighting and law enforcement innovations are going forward. Attorney General Younger tells me that we're now experimenting with a method of transmitting fingerprints from LA to Sacramento in less than a second by bouncing signals off a satellite hovering over Australia. I am asking the California Council on Criminal Justice to explore, in cooperation with local law enforcement, the possibility of establishing regional criminal justice training academies similar to those operated by California Highway Patrol and the FBI. We must give law enforcement technical tools they need to fight organized crime. So again, I ask you to authorize electronic surveillance under strict court controls. Last year, I asked you to make killing a law enforcement officer while on duty first-degree murder. Since then, 21 have been killed. Again, I ask you to make this mandatory first-degree murder. On January 1st of this year, the nation's most far-reaching and innovative drug control program went into effect in California. Our goal is to eliminate the diversion of dangerous pills into illicit markets and to put out of business anyone who is participating in this shameful trade. We shall also propose this year a comprehensive drug abuse treatment plan that will incorporate all we've learned in the various programs to combat drugs during the past few years. Every holiday, we in California are told that we have topped the nation in traffic fatalities. No mention is made of the fact that we also topped the nation in the number of cars and the number of miles traveled. And so a false impression is given because they don't point out that California in 1970 set an all-time low for traffic fatalities. And when the figures are in for 1971, the provisional figures indicate that we will have broken our own record by about 8%. We've been experimenting with ways to reduce traffic on the bridges, as you know, by carpools and reducing the fares. We have, in the last 4 years, reduced the fares on our toll bridges 11 times. Action providing sales tax revenue and gasoline is hopefully another step in meeting local transportation needs. A major goal this year is to establish a Department of Transportation that will develop a proper combination of transportation systems. We've done more in the past 5 years to protect our environment and to eliminate air and water pollution than in any similar period in the past. I want to thank you particularly for passing the smog control program requested last year, and at the same time to tell you further action will be necessary to carry on the battle for air quality control. By your own mandate, environmental goals and a policy report will be presented to you in March, providing additional guidelines on how best to further protect and preserve the land resources and the beauty of California. We must take environmentally balanced actions to protect the coastline and to establish a process for selection and approval of power plant sites. These and other topics will be the subject of environmental messages later on. Last year, I suggested a reorganization plan to create a Department of Environmental Protection, including an effective program for solid waste management. The urgency of acting now is plain. 1 year's accumulation of California's solid waste could cover the entire city of Los Angeles with a layer of garbage 17 inches deep. Now, you know Sam Yorty wouldn't like to come back to that. So this year, I will again ask your support for legislation to create a Department of Environmental Protection that will include a solid waste management program. It has been said that those who fail to plan for the future cannot have one. Each new group of settlers who came to this state came seeking a better life beyond the next mountain range or the next desert. Their children and their children's children, along with our modern-day settlers, continue to seek an improved quality of life, a cleaner environment, economic prosperity, and educational opportunities for their children. Of late, they've had reason to question whether our system of divided responsibilities can be fully responsive to their needs. They rightfully have no patience with the cynical political cliche that far-reaching legislative programs are not enacted in election years. They expect government to be on an annual, ongoing basis, nor will they accept from any of us partisan rivalry as an excuse for a lack of action. A few weeks ago, we read in San Francisco papers the story of an inspiring demonstration of sheer human courage. a gallant young soldier, a triple amputee of the Vietnam War, hobbled painfully on his artificial legs across the Golden Gate Bridge. He said he wanted to encourage other wounded veterans to fight their own handicaps. Well, you and I have some bridges to cross in the next few months. Surely nothing we face in our official business and duties can compare with the challenge he overcame on that long walk. Cicero said, "The good of the people is the chief law. The good of the people is the only thing you and I have a right to consider while we are within these walls." So let's wish each other a happy and hopefully a very short new year.